Good news is you've joined us just at the start of a new series. We're going to be looking together at the subject of culture, the culture of the King's Arms. And last week, Simon made a great start for us, giving an overview, really, for the whole series. And this week, we're really going to dive into the meat of what we're looking at. And I guess the reason we're wanting to look at the subject of culture is that we've always been very clear about our goals and our purposes. So, if you like, where we're headed as a church. But the idea of looking at culture is we also feel it's really important we know who we're becoming along the way. We've got this aim of one day seeing 500 people gather together praising and worshipping God. But the culture of the church says something about the way that we're going to live our lives together. It's not just enough to have 500 people in a room. It's about us looking more and more like Jesus. It's about us adopting a biblical culture for us as a church. And the reality is, of course, that every group, every organization, every company, every church has a culture, a way of doing things together. And that happens either accidentally or deliberately. I worked for a number of years as a careers advisor in the town and around the surrounding area. And as a result, I spent a lot of time in different upper schools in and around Bedford. Often in the breaks, I'd go down to the staff room and just chat and hang out with some of the teachers there. And if you want to get an idea of the culture of a school, teachers will know this, the staff room is the place to head because you can figure out what the place is really like. And I have to say, from my informal survey over a number of years of staff rooms in Bedford, I'd say that many of the schools around here had, certainly then, a highly developed culture of moaning. Of moaning about the work, moaning about the other staff, moaning about the kids. I even had to sit down one time and listen to 20 minutes as a teacher moaned about the attitude of moaning around in the church, in the school there. And as I was reflecting on that, I thought to myself, well, obviously, I doubt very much that the senior management team sat down one day together and said, what sort of culture do we want to be fostering here in this school? I know what we need. We need a culture of moaning. That'll really help us. No, it happened by accident. It happened because space was given for it. Now, obviously, that was 10 years ago, and so I'm sure that things are completely different now. But the thing is this. Unless we are deliberate about the kind of culture that we're going to have, it will just sort of happen by accident and won't necessarily always be the things that we choose. So that's why over the past 6 weeks or so, different groups from the eldership team through to small group leaders have been sitting down and trying to take a biblical perspective on what our culture as a church should look like. And we've come up with five different values that we want to describe what we're like as a church. They're not exhaustive, they're certainly not foolproof, and we're definitely open to any thoughts that you might want to email through to us. But in essence, what we're trying to do is capture the heart of what we're meant to look like as a biblical community. And the five words that we've come up with this are these. The first is honor. The second is generosity. Also acceptance. The fourth is authenticity. And lastly, courage. And Simon gave us that overview last week. Well, this evening, we want to pick that first one in the list there this evening and begin to unpack it a little bit together. We want to this evening to look at the whole subject of honor, of developing a culture of honor within the King's Arms that can grow and really change us and shape us as a church. And the good news is that it seems like honor isn't just our good idea. It's something that's very important to God. Honor is mentioned over 170 different times in the Bible. I've put just a few references in your notes this evening, and as a result, we're only just going to begin to really scratch the surface of this subject. To honor someone means to value them. It means to credit them with worth. And maybe of all of the different culture statements we're going to be looking at together, this is the one that has the potential to stand us out from the world around us. Because honoring someone is a pretty rare thing in our society. Far more acceptable to dishonor. Everything from our comedy shows through to our newspapers to shoppers actually fighting one another in the January sale speaks of dishonour. So much so that honour is now, they're attempting to manage honour and respect through externals by the use of power or discipline, sometimes even in creative ways. Head teachers are trying to establish cultures of respect within schools. And so they come up with all sorts of imaginative ways of doing that. I read one news report about a certain private school that was recently faced with a unique problem. A number of 12-year-old girls were beginning to use lipstick and all of the makeup stuff, and they would be putting on their lipstick in the school bathroom. Except that what they would do is they would put the lipstick on and then they would plant a kiss on the bathroom mirror, which is okay, one or two, but it ended up with dozens of kisses smattered all over this bathroom mirror, and the poor maintenance guy each evening was having to clean off the mirrors ready for the next day. So the teachers put out a note, a memo, they appealed to the girls to stop doing this. Nothing changed. Finally, the head teacher got so distraught that she called in this whole year group, one group at a time, into the bathroom, the girls' toilets. And she had the maintenance guy there with her. She said to these girls, look, I want you to understand the process that this maintenance guy is having to go through every night to clean up your lip prints. And so he stood next to her, and then he grabbed his mop. And she said, watch this. This is what he has to do every night. He picks up his mop and he dips it in the toilet and then wipes it backwards and forwards across the mirror. Since then, there's not been a single lip print on the bathroom mirror. I love that. I really appealed to me when I read that. That's great. What a brilliant idea. But also the thought went through my mind was this. What a shame that the girls didn't honour that caretaker when they first put out the request. This guy who works behind the scenes, probably on very low wages, just they wanted to make his life a bit easier. What a shame the girls couldn't respect that. Why is that like that? Well, there's an absence of honour in our society. And yet, in contrast, in stark contrast, the Bible says that you and I have an extremely high calling to honour. Let's just pick out a few verses. Let's start with Romans chapter 12. You've got this in your notes. I want to focus in on verse 10, but let's just read the paragraph together because it's really powerful. Paul writes this to the church in Rome. Let love be genuine. Abhor what is evil. Hold fast to what is good. Love one another with brotherly affection. Outdo one another in showing honor. Do not be slothful in zeal, be fervent in spirit, serve the Lord. Rejoice in hope, be patient in tribulation, be constant in prayer. Contribute to the needs of the saints and seek to show hospitality. There's so much in just that short paragraph, but it's that verse 10, like I said, I want to zoom in on. Paul wants the church in Rome to understand what is being asked of them with regards to honour. And in verse 10, he says this, that we are to look to give honour to others, firstly, with brotherly affection. With brotherly affection. That's there at the start of verse 10. I wonder if you've ever heard it said that you don't have to like the people that you're in the church with, but you do have to love them. Have you ever heard that said? I think I probably said it myself on occasion. It's this kind of mindset which says it's possible to honour someone, to respect them as a person without actually liking them, without actually having any affection to them, for them. It's almost like saying, I respect you as a person, but I would never want to sit next to you on the train. It's that kind of attitude. In some quarters, if you read some Christian press and blogs and so on, it's almost become fashionable to stand in a place of judgment and to be respectful of the whole church, yet not want to engage. To say, I love Jesus, but I just don't love the church. To say, I love God, but I don't want to be part of a church. because there are so many messed up and dysfunctional and difficult people. I don't want to be part of that. To which, of course, I'd want to say to somebody like that, come in and join us. You'll fit right in. You see, to love Jesus is to love what he loves. And he loves the church so much, he calls it his bride. Paul says here in verse 10 that we're to demonstrate honour and brotherly affection. Theologian John Piper, in his study on this section, says that it's no coincidence that honour has been juxtaposed with brotherly affection. The two go together. The point is this: we don't get to choose people between the two. We're meant to both honour with brotherly affection. The Greeks had four different words for love and affection. The kind of love that is referred to here, it's the only time it appears in the New Testament. It means this: it means a familiar, kind of comfortable affection. Not just tolerating the other person, but even being grateful for them. We're meant to love each other literally like brothers and sisters would love each other. I have four children, so I get to watch brotherly and sisterly love in action every day. Do those brothers and sister ever have any little tricky differences or disputes between them that they need to resolve? Yes. I would say on average about every 15 minutes something comes up. But just you try picking on one of them in the school playground, because you better be prepared to take all of them on. Why? Because they have this brotherly and sisterly affection and commitment to one another. Paul's saying, in just the same way, we're meant to demonstrate honour. Will there be differences from time to time between us? Yes. Hopefully not every 15 minutes. My life will be very busy. There will be conflict, but we're meant to be committed to one another like brothers and sisters. Just a tip for you. When conflict arises in this church, and it will, and it does, we are making the decision that we're not going to resolve conflict by writing letters to one another. I've watched my children. When one steals a Lego toy from the other, they don't rush off, get out a pen and paper and start writing a letter. That's not how they resolve conflict. They do it by talking to one another. I know in some churches, and you may have come from a background like this, somebody gets hot under the collar about something, and they go away, spend 3 hours drafting a really articulate email or letter, and then they fire it off to the person concerned or the church pastor or whatever. The trouble with that is it's so easy to get misunderstood. And conflict then immediately becomes impersonal. It breaks the relationship. Rather, Matthew 18, Jesus says, if you've got a problem with your brother, you go to him and you talk to him about it. When Paul has a falling out with Peter in the New Testament, it says in Galatians that Paul went and spoke to Peter face to face and challenged him on his issues. So that's the way we want to be in this church. When there's an issue comes up, we'll go and talk to the person and try and resolve it that way. Now, I recognise that as I'm in a position of leadership, there's a bit of a risk here that I'm saying out right from the front. If you've got a problem, come and talk to us. All I'd say is at the end, if you can try and form an orderly queue, that would be helpful. But let's talk through things so that we begin to work through issues that we have. That's why the general rule is going to be in this church as a culture, encourage in writing, because that way the person can read it over and over again. It continues to encourage them and challenge in person. So Paul says we're to seek to honour people with brotherly affection. That's the first thing. The second thing is this. We aim to give honour to others more than we're out to seek it for ourselves. Paul says outdo each other in showing honour, meaning that we're deliberately to look for ways of demonstrating honour to another person, to the people around us, to the people in our small group, to be thinking that way. And it's about both the big things and the little things. We had a planning day away as a leadership team the other week in order to get some time out of the office and get some space to think and look to the future. We booked a room in a large Christian country house, And we thought we'll get away to this room, we'll get some time, and we'll spend the day working together, which sounded great. And we booked the garden room in this large country Christian house. And I was imagining like a Victorian conservatory and, you know, pot plants and maybe the butler waiting on us. You know, that's the sort of thing I had in my mind. It turns out the garden room is actually a posh way of saying large shed. So it was a time when we had all the snow and we're holed up in this wooden shack together as a team. And Simon gets the room all set up and we start sitting down and getting down to business. And it was a bit nippy in there, and I'm trying to stay with it. Partway through the morning, I'm trying to console myself and cheer myself and be grateful for the things that God has given us and just the practical things around us. And I thought to myself, well, I'm grateful that at least the chairs are comfortable. It's not, you know, at least we're in these comfortable armchairs. And I just took a look round at the rest of the leadership team, and I realized that actually what had happened was there weren't enough armchairs to go round for everybody. So Simon, in setting up the chairs, had put himself on one of these plastic rickety chairs. It's only a small thing, but the King's Arms is the kind of place where the lead elder sits on the plastic chair so the rest of us can sit in comfort. I thought about it for a bit and thought, well, would I have done that? And I actually came to the conclusion, yes, I think I probably would. But I would have made some jokey reference to it so that everybody knew that I was sitting on the plastic chair. Instead, Simon just did it without a word. That's the kind of church that we're in, where the lead elder looks to honour others. Now, he's away on his wedding anniversary. I can say this without embarrassing him this evening. But what does it look like for you? I've put a little checklist in here in your notes for you. These kinds of things are indications of honour. Do you really listen to people? I mean, do you really listen to them? Or is your conversation with someone about they say something and the whole time they're talking, you're waiting for the next gap when you get to say what you want to say? Or do you really listen? Where are you serving in church? Is it your desire at the end of the day to be a net contributor to King's Arms or a net taker? Where is it you're coming from? Are you willing to do unseen acts of service in order to honour? Or are there some tasks that really you think are a bit beneath you? A friend of mine, who I have to say I have tremendous respect for, joined us some time ago from another church where he was actually an elder. And he now serves on a Sunday morning in our setup team. You see, he sees it as a privilege to honour the guests who arrive at the King's Arms. We want to outdo each other in demonstrating honour to the people God's placed around us, both individually, but also corporately as a body of believers. I want the King's Arms to live with the greatest respect for the other genuinely fantastic churches that there are in this town, where we speak well of other leaders and other churches and don't seek to snipe or compete with them. Once we start doing those kinds of things, choosing to honour, the end result is gratitude, where we begin to see the riches that God has placed in others around us, and we end up genuinely grateful for the people around. So that's the second thing. We want to live with honour like that, seeking to honour others more than we receive honour ourselves. Not only that, but the third thing is this. We want to be a company of people who honours people regardless of their position or status. You may not be aware of it, but the longest serving member of staff at the King's Arms isn't me or Simon or Mike. The person who's been on staff the longest is a lady called Christine, who has been cleaning at the King's Arms offices, I reckon, for nearly 15 years now. She's done other things in between. It makes it sound like it's a really messy office. But no, she's been cleaning at the King's Arms office for that long. She started off cleaning when we had two rooms in an office block on Bromham Road. And then she sort of transferred across to us when we got some new offices, four rooms on the High Street in Bedford. And then she transferred across the road with us to now where we're just off the High Street, where we have nine rooms that she's cleaning. I was chatting to her the end of last year and talking to her about the Crayola building. And I wish I'd thought it through a little bit beforehand, because she said to me in the conversation, she says, how many offices are there then at the Crayola building? And I said, I reckon about 25. And then about, I don't know, several thousand square feet of other areas. And I turned around to look at her, and her face had gone completely pale. And she just thought for a moment, gulped, and then said, okay, I think I'm going to need a new Hoover, is what she said. And I got off on a tangent. I think, do they make ride-on Hoovers? Because that's what, she needs something like that when we move. The reason I mention her is because I think the way we treat Christine is kind of like a thermometer on the type of church that we're becoming. Over the years, we've learned to treat her with increasing honor. So now she is really well known around the offices. People will ask her about her family, about her daughter, about her grandkids, about her son who's out in China. She gets to come along to our Christmas lunches. She gets invited regularly to the breakfast with the girls. And when she had her 60th birthday, the church gave her a special gift. She said to me last year when we were chatting, she said, this is the best cleaning job I've ever had. You see, if you're to be part of this church, then it means to give honor to people regardless of their position or status. It means to give value to people the world often sees as transparent. They kind of see through them. So we're to give that kind of honor to people. But of course, the flip side of the coin is this. We're meant to give honor to people who are in elevated positions, people who are in authority. This is a big one, because if you're anything like me, if someone is in a position of authority or power, my default position is generally to mistrust them. It's to be suspicious of their motives or why they're in it. And yet Paul writes to the slaves in 1 Timothy 6, and he writes to them and he says, slaves, honor your masters. And if Paul can ask a slave to honor his master, who many of them, I'm sure, weren't that great, then surely we can honor those people who God has placed in authority around us. The principle still holds. So we're to honor leaders in this church, both within the church, but also outside it. Not because of their position, but because of their service and their sacrifice. Make it your aim to honor people regardless of their position or status. So that's the third thing. So the Bible tells us to honor with affection, to outdo each other in honor, and to honor regardless of status. Okay, are you ready for the last one, the big one? Are you ready for it? It's this. We are to honor people regardless of whether they deserve it in our eyes. We're to honor people regardless of whether they deserve it. I was walking through town a few months back, and there was a homeless lady who was in a doorway, and she stopped me and asked me for money. And I didn't have any cash on me at the time, so I said, I'm sorry, I don't have any money, but I had with me my packed lunch. I said to her, look, if you're hungry, you can have my lunch. So I took out my lunch and handed it to her. The woman grabbed my sandwich out of my hand. She took one look at it and said, I don't eat brown bread, and chucked it on the floor and sent me away with an expletive. I tell you, I was so angry. I was so angry. It's a good job it was a lady, because if it had been a guy, there could have been fisticuffs on the street. I found that so hard. When someone has just thrown your lunch on the floor, it was a cheese sandwich as well. It's great. I felt it was so wrong. In the moments like that, honor is just a decision. And yet, as I thought about it and I prayed about it, I felt like God wanted to interact with me on it. I realized something. I was going into that engagement with that lady with a belief in my mind. And it was this. The belief is, I will honor you with my lunch if you are extremely grateful to me. I will honor you with my sandwich if you make me feel good by saying a profound and heartfelt thank you. That was the bargain in my mind. And I was angry because I felt she had welched on the deal. It turns out there's no such thing as a free lunch. She was meant to pay for the sandwich by being really grateful. And then that would give me nice warm feelings inside and make me feel virtuous. The message is this: I will honor you if you will show me appreciation. That's not unconditional love. That's a deal. I get something back from you. I'd suggest to you tonight, you can't really learn about honor until you're valuing somebody who's not able to give anything back. That's why every single one of us needs to have some giving, some contact with the poor. It's not just for those serving on the project. Because poor people are poor. They don't have anything to give back to you. They can't give you gratitude or make you feel good about yourself. Bottom line, we are meant to give honor, not to be thanked, but because people are made in the image of God. That's meant to be the reason why we honor people. Because God says they're worth it. That's what we're shooting for. That's what we're aiming at. It's dead easy to love somebody who has the capacity to love you back. The trouble is, though, what happens to those people who missed out on love in the first place? Who don't have anything to give you? We're meant to make an impact, not just to love the lovely. I wonder how you feel as you think about that. Maybe God is wanting to stir you on that. I look at this list of four things that we've just gone through, and I stand back and I feel pretty daunted, if I'm honest. I was preparing this. Oh, gosh, I'm totally, utterly convicted by these calls from us to us from Scripture. And it left me asking this question that I want to finish with. It's this: how on earth can we live up to a calling like this? I mean, really, how can we manage it together as a church? The only way I'd suggest to you that we can ever live up to these kind of standards is if we first learn to receive honor before we give it. Because ultimately, honor comes from God. The relationships within the Godhead, the relationships in heaven itself, are held together by honor. The Bible is full of it. We have received honor directly from God. Romans 5, verse 8 says this: but God demonstrates his own love for us in this. While we were still sinners, Christ died for us. You want value? You want respect? You want honor? It's in there. John 1 says this, 1 John 1, yet to all who received him, to those who believed in his name, he gave the right to become children of God. We are highly honored people. You see, trying very hard to respect and honor people will only get us so far. We as followers have been valued by God. The more we can understand what we've received, that we've been given dignity and honor by God himself, then the more we'll be able to give it out. If your self-worth, your self-identity is intact from that position, then you have nothing left to prove. Then that provides strength for you then to go on and love and honor others. The more I grasp that, the more I've got to give away. Galatians 3 and 4 says that you and I are heirs to a kingdom. That means that we are literally princes and princesses in a kingdom that will never end. Talk about value. Talk about dignity. It means that we are esteemed and honored. The more I can grasp the honor I'm receiving from God, the less I'm going to worry about my cheese sandwich being thrown on the floor. I want to get to this dizzying height of Christian maturity where I'm secure enough in God that I'm not worried about my lunch being rejected. That, you know, I'm aiming for the big stuff. Because when I reach that point, I realize I don't need this lady's respect. I don't need her to value me. Why? Because I'm treasured by the King of the universe. And I can give out to her. Let me ask you, how good are you at getting your sense of value direct from God? Or like me, are you still a bit caught up in what people think about you or your ability to do things well? You can get your identity direct from God, or you can get it from your reputation and your performance. One leads to joy and generosity. The other leads to insecurity and misery. The key to establishing a culture of honor here at the King's Arms is not to have some fancy graphics and then try really hard to be nice to one another. I give us about a fortnight, tops. Some of you, a week. That's not the way to do it. Listen, you can only give what you have got. And the only way for us to give our honor is to get it for ourselves. And I don't care if you've been a Christian 20 minutes or 20 years. Your number one responsibility is to know who he is and what he says about you. And that is not something to do and then move on. Christian maturity is the ability to stay in that place. Those people who grasp this are the ones who tend to do exploits for God. The 19th century Christian reformer George Muller, he rescued literally hundreds and thousands of orphans from destitution and poverty on the streets of Bristol by faith and not much else. He gave them security and value. He used to say this. He said, "My single responsibility each morning before I do anything else is to find myself happy in God." People who find themselves happy in God, people who soak up the love of the Father, are the ones who then have the resources to go and do exploits for him. Or to give you a more modern day example, I heard about this week, just to close, about a guy called Chris Hogan, who's a Christian American football coach in a high school in the States. And he and his team were meant to go and to play a match against a team from the Gainesville Young Offenders Institution. And he knew that as they were going, that loads of parents from his high school would be going in order to support their children. But he also knew that it was highly unlikely that any of the parents from the Young Offenders Institution would be going to support their children. Many of them came from fatherless homes, and a lot of them had been completely disowned by their families. He thought about it before the match and realized this is totally unacceptable. So before the fixture, he gathered his team's parents together and he divided them into two groups. And then he got hold of the team list from the other side, and he assigned different parents to different members of the team. And he said, "Okay, you're cheering for Danny and you're cheering for Leon." And he went so on down the list. And then he got them to sit on the other side, the benches on the opposing team's side. So the whole way through the match, these lads whose society had given up on and their parents had given up on had someone shouting their name, someone applauding their effort, someone waving their banner for their team. And then at the end, the parents formed a victory tunnel as both teams exited the field. The report was that smiles were very much mixed with tears as these hardened lads were softened by having honour demonstrated to them. The media got hold of the story. And in an interview, Chris Hogan said this, "I hate it that this thing that we did is so rare. Everybody views it as such a big deal. But shouldn't that be the normal way we operate, though?" Chris Hogan was made a guest of honor at this year's Super Bowl. We're called to live like that. Not to keep honor within the safe confines of the church, but to give it away. To get it direct from God and then give it away lavishly so that the society around us is transformed as a result. And the more our society heads towards dishonor, the greater the opportunity for the honor that we demonstrate to shine out like a beacon from heaven that it is.